Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Dr. John Stanny live from a cold Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. But it's always a good time for ScaryCast. This episode is a special edition of ScaryCast. I was on the phone talking with co-host of ScaryCast, Mark Johnston, who's been a very, very good friend of mine for about 4 years. And we have shared lots of paranormal adventures and things like that. And he started telling me the most incredible story. And 25 minutes ago, I said, Mark, stop. Let's run a special edition ScaryCast podcast. And I want you to tell everybody, because sometimes this is too much to talk about. I know that last night, Valentine's night, we had our special Valentine's, which were Jen Cruz of the She Squatchers and Robin Haynes McCray. I got that right. Of ScaryCast. They are two wonderful ladies. It was a blast. We had a good time. But tonight, I'm going to devote a special hour to my very, very good friend and paranormal experiencer, Mark Johnston. So good evening, Mark. How are you doing tonight?
Hey, John. Thanks for doing this. You know, it's always a pleasure being on your show with everybody, all the great guests like Robin and Trey and everybody. It's always a great time. I'm glad that we can have a chance. So I don't mean you talk all the time one-on-one. It's cool to do this one-on-one. And I think I've some things that, you know, it's been a long time since I've considered these things, but because of the topics of conversation we're talking about, it recalled something and I relayed to you. And it's on record. It's not something I'm just making out of thin air. It's on record from back in the day, something that was a real experience. And we'll talk about this, and I'll tell you everything I know about it. You know, it's a bit of an ambiguous experience, but I think there is something to it.
Okay, now, first of all, I'm going to caution you for saying something is an ambiguous experience. There are no such things. There are experiences, and there are things that are not experiences.
Yep.
And you've had some marvelous experiences. And tonight, I'm going to let you get started with what really got me excited and prompted this ScaryCast special. So get going on it, because everybody is going to enjoy this, okay?
Sure. Well, first of all, I just want to give a little bit background, the fact that, you know, what we're dealing with is going to be the ET subject, extraterrestrials, and it's something that has been ongoing through my life ever since a kid, having what I consider like nighttime visitations by ETs. And, you know, and that is the biggest experience when you look back at it, because, you know, how memory is, and it's like, you know, did I think this happened one way or did it happen another way? But from what I recall, like recollection, you know, I've had ever since a very young age certain things that are unexplained when it comes to this, and I believe are ET experiences, to put directly. Now, growing up as well, like it's always been an interest to me to understand this, and there's been this innate drive to understand the unknown, which has led me to your show, because obviously we met and we're like hit it off, we're like, you know, we're all into these types of things. And for me, though, it goes a lot deeper rooted. And this is something that I think you realized tonight. Hey, there's more beneath the surface than what I know of Mark in the last even 3 years, which is a long time. But these are things that are going back for me that, you know, some of these things I haven't even put much thought into for a long time, even though I know it is a reality and something I experienced. So to get right into it, tonight, me and you were talking about, because we're talking about computer programming, and I was like, oh, I got to check out this YouTube channel I had back in the day. Check out some of the computer programs I put on that had to do with harmonics and programming, like creating an autonomous program that made music by itself, essentially. But then in doing so, I'm like, I came across other videos I made, which are on topic with what we talk about, obviously the ET topic and ScaryCast and things. And this is a video that was dated in 2012, but the experience itself was from 2008. And it was something that was very real to me that happened at the time. And it was a very eye-opening experience. And I had dealt with UFO experiences before, which I told you on another podcast I had. But that was the, remember, John, the, that was the, night lights, aurora borealis. That then I saw the silhouettes of the what looked like footballs in the sky, and then they cluster, and then it jumped around and whatnot, right? So I was already open-minded to the subject by this point of this 2008 when this happened. And I'll just get right into it because I don't want to beat around the bush anymore, which is I was at a music festival called Shambhala Music Festival. It's still going on to this day. At this time in 2008, it was still kind of more of its infancy. So it was like now it's more like developed. But back in the day, it was more of a grassroots. And it's very hippie and British Columbia, Canada, very psychedelic oriented and very very artistic and very spiritual music festival and very organic. You know, it's not like a lot of music festivals you go to where they have the beer gardens and, you know, a bunch of people drunk. You're not even allowed to drink booze on this festival at all. But you're allowed to do anything
else. Now, Mark, hold on. There's nothing wrong with having a beer with your paranormal experience now, is there?
And I agree. And, there's still ways around it, right? But, you know, you're not supposed to. In this music festival, alcohol is off limits. Like, if the security saw you, they either kick you out or confiscate, essentially. But, you know, you could do a lot of other things in front of them and there'd be no problem, right? But anyway, it's one of those types of festivals, and I don't want even to say that because it almost, like, discredit me, because at the time I was not on anything other than maybe a few glasses of red wine I think we had for dinner. I was with my girlfriend at the time, and it was at this music festival. And essentially, the music festival comprised of a bunch of stages that are in the middle of nature, in the middle of BC wilderness, in an ancient growth forest. Very special, energetic place. And so you can walk between stages through the forest, and it's along the way there's artworks and there's lots of crazy things like going on there. It's like Burning Man, but it's even better than Burning Man in some ways. Just to paint a picture of what it's like. But anyway, we're on this one of the stages on kind of like the outskirts of it, where, you know, to the back of me is just nature, nothing but like black nature. There's nothing there. And I was dancing there with my girlfriend, and the best way I can describe was what I call a psychic nudge. So something, I was in the middle of dancing, and something made me want to turn around and be like, you know, something made me just like startled me, and it was like, okay. So I turned around, and right there was two beings that were very human-like, but they looked exactly the same, and they were about 6'5" tall humans. But I could tell, right off the bat, I could tell that there was just something not consistent with humans. Now, if you would have seen them saw them in like a crowd, and the way they were, you might have walked past them, and if you weren't paying direct attention, you would even notice that they weren't human. But like I was telling you, John, like if you knew the scientific differences between a cougar and a bobcat, or a wolf and a coyote, or a chimpanzee and a orangutan, right? You know that, you know, if you were uneducated, you'd be like, oh, it's the same thing. They look the same, right? But if you know the distinct features, right, you would understand, like, no, this isn't the same thing. And that's the best way I can explain that, was my initial, the first impression was, hey, you're not human. And what was the experience, and I wish I had a totally better story that was more, like, fantastical, but this is, it's pretty dull, to be honest, which was I just gave them like a head nod and just a recognition that I understood they were there, and then I carried on my business. And as I was telling you, John, I didn't want to act like needy. Like, imagine if I was like, oh, can I take a picture with you guys and hey, ask you like 50 questions, whatever else. It would be like, you know, like screw you, essentially, right? Like it would just be like a bad vibe, right? Essentially, I just played it natural,
right,
like
it,
I was just encountering anybody else.
In other words, we are not acting like tourists, are we?
Yeah, it was just a very natural experience, and there was something very calming about it. Like I mentioned that psychic nudge, and this is the key thing, which something made me turn around. Like I was like, huh? Like, huh? I turned around, and there's two of them there on the outskirts of this festival, and they were wearing, and here's the description of them. Okay, so 6 feet, 6 feet and a half, 6.5 feet tall. They had their mouths partially covered, which from my recollection, which the whole experience only lasted 20, 30 seconds at most. I believe that there was some type of breathing apparatus under a face sheath, almost like a mask, like what we're in now with COVID or whatever, the masks, right? But there was something kind of odd about it. And the oddness might not have been a breathing apparatus. It might have been the facial structure in itself that they were kind of shielding in the mouth area. That was something that I always thought about in my recollection. I was like, was I not witnessing something underneath that was a breathing apparatus, but I was witnessing a protruding jaw or something like that? That's what it almost seemed.
Mark, I need to stop you for just a second, and I want to tell you something that happened tonight at my local Office Depot store, because I know I go to the one in Surfside Beach. I know every employee there. We are actually all very good friends. I've been going there for 10 years. They're kind, wonderful people. And tonight I noticed there's one fellow, and I will not call his name, but he had on the strangest mask. And when you mentioned it looked like a breathing apparatus, well, it did. And well, he's always been to me a little too smart to work at Office Depot. Not that I'm not saying anything bad about working there, but this guy is like an intellectual giant. And he had on, I just recalled it. He had on a very strange looking mask that looked like a breathing apparatus. I noted it, but I didn't think about it until just now. So, yes, you know, everybody that's listening to this podcast, please be sure to note when someone has on a special, like a mask that looks like a special breathing apparatus, and kind of get curious about it, see what happens. Okay, Mark, back to you.
Well, to add on that, it almost seemed like they're wearing like almost like a, the best way I can describe it was like a Islamic hijab or something, or like a shawl that covered kind of their mouth a little bit to just kind of shield. What I'm thinking is just the characteristics that would have gave them away right off the bat. Like they were trying to blend it. There's a blending in kind of going on because they were close enough. But, you know, like I was saying, like you can tell distinctions, and there was just something about the facial, everything about them that just didn't add up. And the fact there was two of them there. And but also there was something energetic about the experience too, which I was trying to get at before, which is a psychic nudge. And I turned around, and then it was just a recollection. It was just an acceptance. That's all it was. The whole experience was just, hey, okay, I see. I accept. Cool. Party on, you know. That's all it was. And I wish I could have been like, oh, and I asked them a bunch of questions and this and that. Where are you from? And this and that, but it wasn't even about that, because the whole festival itself was just kind of a free, loving vibe and experience. It would have just been like a something that I would have done anybody else. You know, if I was turned around in the middle of the festival and there was just a normal guy there, like it would have been the same thing. It would just be like, hey, cool, hey, we're right on, right? That's pretty much all it was. It was just a good vibe kind of interaction, and I wish there was more to it. Like I feel like the story itself is kind of lame in a sense, but that's how it happened, essentially.
Right, and now I've got to interject the following. You are the first person, I guess, I live under a rock. Well, no, not really. I live in this place in Myrtle Beach. But no, sometimes I feel like I live under a rock because I have not heard about many, actually mostly ET things, and you call them tall white humans. Now, you said right before we went on that you had some notes about tall white humans and Edward Snowden, who is, to a lot of us, a hero. And do you mind sharing that with us? Because I think that is extremely, extremely important in our discussion of tall white humans.
Well, just the background of what this happened in 2008, and the video I showed you, which, first of all, I created this illustration, which is a little animation that I posted on the YouTube channel that I showed you, John, before. That was dated 2012, which is it's just an illustration of the experience, which I was dancing, and then I turned around, and there they are, And I was like, okay, carry on. And I danced on. That's all it was. And but the thing is, after this happened, obviously I had questions, right? I'm like, okay. So looking at all the ET literature and folklore, if you want to call it, or New Age things, and, you know, because at the time, I don't know if it's going on too much at this time, but at the time it was like a lot of people talking about Pleiadians and Sirians and Arcturians and all this, that, and the other, all these different groups of aliens that are here guiding our evolution and this, that, and the other. So I was really fascinated in this because I had this experience, and I was like, okay, well, maybe there's something here that kind of will add value to it. The thing that I came across that best, at least illustrated in description-wise, was something that was called the tall white aliens, which are humanoid, human-like, very much more than like the typical gray aliens. Now, this could be obviously a hybrid species, or, you know, their own kind of class in themselves. I don't know. I can only speculate when it comes to that. But in some of the descriptions at the time that came to mind was that the places that there's interactions with them and certain military through Dulce Air Force Base or Area 51 type of thing. And there's some talk of some interaction with them and maybe some Q clearance type of military black project situation. And so that's what I came across, that actually held some validity, because not that kind of New Age spiritual, oh, I'm a Pleiadian or something, right? It was like, oh, this is like actually military discussing the fact that they were working with tall white aliens, essentially. And in just before this conversation, I just did a quick Google search and whatever, and I saw this thing that actually came across one time, but this is actually more recent than, like, so this would have been after all this research I've done myself, because this is in 2019, I'm reading now. It's Edward Snowden, which was the famous whistleblower who essentially became like a terrorist or whatever for, you know, telling the truth. He's saying that the government is working with these, and there's certain documents that that suggest this.
Sure. And I certainly understand that viewpoint, because a lot of people believe that, and a lot of people believe that that it started with Teddy Roosevelt, who had a Bigfoot experience. And you can go to my book. The brand new book is getting ready to be released in about a month. It's Aliens, UFOs, and Anomalies, second edition, much expanded, more new stories. We've got a couple of great UFO stories in there that were not there. And, you know, Teddy Roosevelt not only had one of the first really well-recorded Bigfoot experiences, along with, of course, Davy Crockett. I mean, Teddy Roosevelt was the man. And so we've got kind of a record of presidents having contact with aliens, and, you know, Dwight Eisenhower, I think, being the preeminent one. So, you know, we've got a lot of experience talking with aliens. It's obvious that if there are aliens, they have talked with our government. That is the most incredibly that is the dumbest thing to say no to. They absolutely have spoken with our government, and apparently the scuttlebutt is that Eisenhower allowed them to take a certain number of humans in exchange for some technology. And that's, you know, where we got a lot of our space technology. I mean, that's what is, in fact, it's reasonable to assume that that's the case. Now, if the men in black or the tall white aliens come in here and knock on my door, I'm not going to answer. But anyway, Mark, that's kind of what I think. I think it's very reasonable that they contacted our government, don't you?
Yeah, and I think, I was just looking at things in my own research that, that was a description of what I saw, and most described it, and this was the closest thing that I came across that actually held some, like, credence or whatever to, you know, actual records and something else, right? And you know what? And here's the thing, John, and I'll just say it out here, just to be honest. I'm my own biggest skeptic. Like, when you're thinking about memory and things, it's like, did I really imagine that? Or like, I second guess myself. I'm my worst critic when it comes to that. But I promise you, when it happened, it was like, it was a real experience. And it's ambiguous in the sense that it's nothing that I could have grounded in reality. Like, imagine just having something that happens to you that's outside of your perception of what is reality, right? How do you make sense of that? It's almost traumatizing in a sense sometimes. But the thing is that about this was it was so natural of an experience, and it led to many more questions, and it led to, I think, my development as far as, like, looking into things on this topic.
I mean, very good. That's a good analysis of the situation and how it led you to looking at other things, because that's important. That's really important that you are looking at other things, because, I mean, if we do not use our natural curiosity, then something's wrong with us. Do you agree with me?
I agree. And so I have a few hypotheses as to what actually went on there, because again, it was an ambiguous experience. It was kind of a short-lived one. There wasn't much substance to it as far as exchange of information or this, that, and the other. The only thing I gathered from it was that there was some that I came across these beings that were not, that had distinct unhuman-like features. And it was, there's two of them, and there was something also supernatural about the experience, just in the feeling of it. But so what I'm wondering is why there, and why in general? And my what I can gather is the fact is that the festival was at, which is Shambhala, which is in British Columbia. And at the time, like I was saying, it was kind of before it became mainstream, it was more grassroots. I believe that these beings were like scientific researchers of the culture, of ahead of the curve culture, what was coming next. And this music festival was a lot of psychedelics. It was a lot of abstract things in itself. Ambiguous things in itself, like literally you walk from one stage to another and you come across weird sculptures and everybody's wearing weird costumes, and it's really like out there experience, and in the middle of nature, in the middle of an old growth ancient forest. Like, it's a very special place. And I think my hypothesis is something like it's almost like Burning Man. It's like it's like a new kind of culture, electronic music, art and spirituality and togetherness. And, you know, that's kind of maybe fueled by psychedelics. There might be something there that's, you know, part of the collective perturbed brain chemistry of it all. And, you know,
well,
open-mindedness
to it. Well,
here's
what I'll say to you, because you have, in essence, described the age of Aquarius. The fact that we're all going to get together, we're going to live together, we're going to love together. That is, you know, and I've got I've got probably one of the few copies that were ever remaining of Vera Reed's book, Age of Aquarius, and it's an amazing book, and it talks about how we're going to live together and be together, and even though right now we've got world powers at odds with each other, it talks about a calming of that. And that's why I guess I'm not so worried. And I'd like to thank Vera Reed, because I'll tell you what, some of these old astrologers, she was in the mid-50s. She knew what she was doing. Absolutely.
Yeah. John, have you ever heard of the book called Voyagers, Secrets of Amenti?
No, I have not. Now, who is that by?
It's by Ashayana Dean. Now, this was one of the books that was instrumental in my understanding of ETs in a more, next level type of understanding. And the way this book lays everything out, the whole ET agenda, the whole government history of humankind, and it goes into biospiritual evolution, it goes into everything. And it's just like the greatest, like, bigger picture gestalt type of situation. It just ties everything together. And this was something I read that one of my good friends, who's kind of a new age kind of spiritual lady, she gave to me after I had a UFO experience. So I was like trying to understand my UFO experience. And she's like, here, take this. And what this book explains, and I think this ties into like what I see as potential validity in this tall white alien situation, is the multiple ET agendas that we're kind of in the middle of. Now, a lot of the, you know, abduction experiences is by these gray aliens and this and that. So that's very common in the modern day folklore and, you know, literature as far as ET experiences go. But then there's also other ones as well that we cannot dismiss. And I know you're into, you know, lizard men and things, like potentially there's other type of, you know, hominid species or cryptids or whatever else you want to call it that's alongside us, right? And that's a potential as well. So some of these things might not be from.
Mark, I want to stop you and say thank you for associating me with the Lizard Man, because the brand new book Lizard Man Companion is coming out this week. The week of that is Valentine's 2022. It is coming out. It will be available on Amazon. And what I can tell you about Lizard Man is that there are a group of them that appreciate the publicity that I give the Lizard Man. I mean, there's a group of them that do not like what I'm doing. And this came from some, let's say not knowledge, but this came from some observations by Robin McRae, one of the preeminent psychics in the world, and one of my closest friends, and she said, you know, some of those guys really like you for keeping them in the forefront so that people don't forget them. But some of them, they just want to be left alone. And so it's an interesting dichotomy. Yes, sir.
Well, John, this book that I was talking about, Voyager's Secret of Amenti, is something that outlined the whole timeline of human history going back in the day, the prehistory of things and the alien involvement then, but it also goes into the modern day things that has happened to this day. And I believe that I'll send you a link. Maybe it's the best thing that I've explained that kind of ties everything together. I don't think it's like a one all in all type of thing, but if the more that becomes uncovered, for example, with Bob Lazar, you know what I mean? And his situation at Los Alamos and Area 51 and things like that. And all these things about what's happening in the military and this and that. This book, I think, lays it down in a way. And what I believe, this is my hypothesis, I can only speculate because we're dealing with like a more of a deductive method of seeing things as far as like induction, where you have things laid out like in front of you and you can see. If I was to deduce this, it is that there is a ET agenda that we're directly involved with one way or another, directly and indirectly. And that goes through black op military, what I call Q clearance, which is like, you know, beyond clearance of, general military clearance. And I think that there is something going on there, just in my own basic research, and that ties in with this. And they're directly involved in our evolution one way or another. That's the conscious evolution. And that's why I believe that they were there. But just witnessing or taking apart or even engineering it, as far as I'm concerned, I don't know. I can only speculate. But they were there, and it had something to do with the fact that this festival was next level human evolution party, essentially.
Wow, that's incredible. That's the kind of thing that we need to know. So where do you think? And I didn't tell you I was going to ask this question. Where do you think the tall white aliens are leading us? Because obviously even if they're just experimenting and watching us, they are leading us somewhere. So where are they leading us?
Well, I believe that there's multiple groups. You know, there's not just one, and even our own group, human. You know, we have our own destinies and goals and agendas, right? Like, you have your own personal agenda that might be different than mine, right? We all have our own agendas, and potentially, like, if I was to look at the grand scheme of things, there might be multiple groups that are working together, one degree or another, or symbiosis nature, you know, common evolution, or, you know, this, that, or the other. Now, and we also have to discuss the fact that they might not be from another planet. They might have been here the whole time. And there might have been a breakaway civilization from Atlantis or something. They might have been humans that just broke away and evolved alongside us, you know, as well. So there's other things, hypotheses that we can look at that would factor into this conclusion. But what I think is that there's a control for essentially the timeline of Earth. Earth is on a timeline. Earth is a collection that's like a database of all this life forms and all this information and this, that, and the other, and like the whole human history, the whole history in general, and where it's all going. There's something of importance here. And what I believe is that there's some oversight / engineering going on with ETs, and obviously we're a direct part of that. You know, I think we're just negligent. We're just here, and we're kind of like we don't really see the big picture. We're just kind of like based on our own perception, kind of very tunnel vision. We don't see what's going on alongside us, but there's a whole lot going on alongside us, and it's been there the whole time, I believe, you know, on our human evolution.
That is very true, and I guess my experiences with Ed Edwards, EDD, Ed Edwards, the psychic in Clayton, mm-hmm. Georgia, taught me a lot about that. Those are some things that are in an upcoming book. I had to agree to a 5-year stay of execution to not discuss what he told me, but I'll tell you what, there are some crazy, crazy things getting to come down with us, and, you know, just I'll leave it at that. All right, back to you, Mark. So where are we going from here?
Well, you know, I'll just say this. Like, the one thing that experience, even though it was ambiguous, as I said, and kind of like there wasn't much you could take out of it directly, there was a lot that kind of along the lines I took out of it and through my own research I came across. But I'm just trying to connect the dots and puzzle piece things together, things that are well-recorded and well documented and through testimony, right? You know, in the court of law, testimony is a big thing, right? Like somebody yes. can go to jail for their whole life based on like what somebody says, right? Am I right?
Right.
But so there's a lot of testimony out there that I think that supports this a lot, to say the very least. And different military things. When I was reading about the Edward Snowden thing, it was actually the Iranians who were disclosing these things. So potentially there's other countries that are more, or if not, like, they're in the know, maybe not more, but maybe the U.S. and the direction it took post-Nazi era, you know, like Project Paperclip, we took all the Nazis, right, and we brought them to, you know, the middle of the desert in Nevada, right? So, like, potentially there
continued. No, sir. Now, Mark, we did not take them to the middle of Nevada, because I'll go ahead and tell you what I know to be a fact, is that those scientists, Wernher von Braun and the whole bunch, were brought to Pawleys Island, South Carolina, which is where I used to live, and they were taken to a place called Sandy Island, right off the coast of the Intercoastal Waterway. And to this day, if you dare walk on the wrong side of Sandy Island, black military helicopters will come out there and make you leave, because it is a frightening thing. So, I mean, no, they're right down here where I was. And what happened?
Is it an Air Force base or a military base?
No, not at all. It is about 40 miles north of the Charleston Air Force Base. But they hid okay. them on Sandy Island in Pawleys Island, South Carolina. Well, okay. the Germans sent U-boats to try to bomb the area. It was called Crescent Beach, but now we know it is North Myrtle Beach. And so they were trying to find these German scientists, and they wanted to bomb them, and that's what they did. But they were down here in Sandy Island, which is a little spot right next to Pawleys Island, or actually in the domain of Pawleys Island. So, yeah, I mean, it's amazing. Like, I live in one of the most spiritually and militarily rich areas of the world, and I'm just down here in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and I'm kind of scared to talk about it. I will not write a book about it, so all you guys from the military that are listening, I will not write a book about it, and there is a certain plantation that is terrifying. And you know what I know, you know what I'm talking about. I am terrified of it, and I will not talk about it. So, I mean, but, you know, we got some cool things down here. That's why I live in Myrtle Beach. We've got the ghost of Alice Flagg. She's the most romantic ghost probably in the country. And we've got some great things, but I'll tell you what, we've got some extremely frightening things in this area. And I will not divulge them because I know I'm not supposed to. Because if I do, I don't want that black Cadillac hanging out in front of my house. I don't, Mark.
You might get the visit from the Men in Black, right?
I have been visited by the Men in Black. So
I believe, here's the thing, John, and I wasn't going to get into this, but I think it's a good segue into this topic, which is an important one, which is the fact of how the intelligence agencies, if you look at intelligence agencies, how much they're involved in engineering culture and counterculture. For example, the whole Timothy O'Leary thing was a CIA operation. There's like, if you look at all these things of counterculture, Black Panthers was a CIA operation. All these counterculture things, potentially the ET counterculture, if you look at that, because that's what it is. It's kind of going against the grain of culture when you say we're visited by ETs. It's not a typical normal thing to say, right? In social, social norms. But
probably
the thing is, though,
But the thing is, though,
maybe that there's a lot of deception in the typical channels for what we consider as like ET reality. I think the reality of the situation is a lot deeper and a lot more abstract or ambiguous, to use that term again. I think we really would have a hard time wrapping our minds around it. But what I've gathered, again, this is just through deducing, like I don't have just straight evidence that I can just show you guys this. But from what I'm gathering is that they've been here the whole time, and they're playing an integral part in our evolution of our timeline and destiny, human destiny.
Okay. You stopped off right when I thought you were in the middle of a thought, and I was kind of listening and assimilating. So could you – no, I'm serious. I was thinking about some things – that I could contribute. So could you please go back to the very last 20 seconds of what you were saying, and then I'll pick up there, and I will be
okay.
A good host. Okay?
So just based on, like, if you look at human history in general, like going through the ages and things, there always seem to be some supernatural component to things, and potentially, like, angels and whatever else visitations, and on battlefields, like UFOs appear, and maybe guiding our culture in general, but as well our destiny. You know, as far as who's controlling the whole engineering of society type of thing, the world going on. And I think there's something there where there's something alongside us that is playing a key role, or potentially a symbiotic role, symbiosis being, they're much ingrained in it just as we are in the end result.
Okay. All right. Well, now what I was thinking of, and I just walked to my bookshelf and grabbed it, is when you're talking about how UFOs have been around us at key moments, I've got a copy of John LeMay's and Noe Torre's book. It's called Early 20th Century UFOs, American Sightings, 1900 to 1919. Now, it is absolutely my favorite book in the world because it is dedicated to me, all right? So you can go buy a copy on Amazon. But the point is, they have a picture on the front cover of the Titanic sinking. And the fact is, there were three UFOs spotted over the area where the Titanic was sinking. And I mean, it's the most beautiful piece of artwork. It's just magnificent. And it just says that we are being visited. In fact, may I share two stories with you? They're very short. Would you be okay with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Okay. First of all, the first story came from when I was running Carolina Caricatures. And we were outside at Plyler Park in Myrtle Beach. This boy and his mom came up to get a caricature. He was about 16 or 17. And so I told him about I mentioned the paranormal. He said, "Oh, my God, I've got to tell you what happened to me." And they have a condo. It's probably about the 15th floor of their building, Ward North Myrtle Beach. And he said he was sitting there one night. Mom had gone to bed. His sister had gone to bed. And he was just sitting there watching. And this little tiny ball of orange light started coming at him from like a distance. And it came up. It got about 100 feet from him. It was fairly large. It was probably about 50 feet in diameter around. And it sat there. And then it sped off. And I said, oh, my God, you saw a scout ship and you should have gone inside, because scout ships are known to take people. And, you know, and so that's a scary thing. And the author, Bo Bryan, my friend, and he is the author of the book Shag, the international bestseller. And Bo was down on a little fishing boat in Florida with his best friend. And they were like, you know, they were like puttering along in their little boat, getting back in. You know, they were in a river, and they were getting back to where they needed to be, but they were about a half hour away. And Bo said he turned around, and all of a sudden there was an orange orb following them. And he said the orb was a couple hundred feet away, but he said it might have been around 50 feet in diameter. And I said, well, that was another scout ship. That is certainly part of his belief of UFOs, is that he's seen a scout ship.
Well, John, I told you about this on a previous podcast of my experience in Spain, and we weren't planning to talk about this. And I've had two major what I consider UFO experiences. One is with the Aurora Borealis, the situation I've talked about at least three times on your show. But there was one other time when I was living in Spain. And I was a nightclub photographer, so I worked. And the nightclubs in Spain go to, like, you know, 6 in the morning. It's like, you know, light. It's light out when the party's done, right? So I got out of the nightclub, finishing my photos, and I had to ride my bike home across the island of Ibiza, Spain. So I was going from where the nightclub district is all the way home, a place called Jesus of all places. And I was riding my bike, and I looked up in the sky. Something made me just want to look up in the sky, and I saw a glowing orange, what I consider like glowing gold, like it was just like, or copper almost color, just like, but bright as hell. And I took photos of it. I took two photos of it, and my nightclub camera, with my nightclub photography camera, I had a wide angle lens, so I couldn't zoom in on it. Like, I wish I could have, like, you know, just like zoom scoped right in on that. But like a wide angle lens, you know, you can't zoom shit. Like, it's just like, you know, you can barely see anything like 50 feet from you, essentially. But anyway, I could tell in the sky that it was like a glowing ball. But I watched this thing, and it disappeared, and then it reappeared, and then it disappeared, and it was gone. And that was probably over the course of a few minutes. Like, it was there. I was watching it, solid golden sky. Disappeared. I took a few photos. Disappeared. I'm like, okay, it's gone. Then reappeared. I was like, oh, there it is again. And then, boom, it was gone again. Area of Spain, it's a very unique place geographical. Like, there's this place called Esvedra, which is like a Bermuda Triangle effect, where like if you fly over it, all your compasses start spinning in circles, and like, you know, has this, like, it's like the most magnetic place on Earth, and it has some of the most oldest living organisms of Earth living there. Like, it's a very unique, biodiverse place, and it's on the Mediterranean. So it's like, I think the Mediterranean has a vibe in itself. Like, if you think of like going back to Greek times, and, you know, it's a place, it's like one of the origins of, you know, Western, you know, everything. So it's like, I think that if we were talking about human evolution, like, obviously the Mediterranean is a key place, right?
Wow. Well, I can say that the Mediterranean Ocean, when it filled in, because it used to be kind of like a large canyon, and it filled in, and strange things happened. Now, some people have attributed that to the fact that there was an Atlantis-type continent or subcontinent in the Mediterranean Ocean, or that canyon. But, you know, we don't know, and some people say that Atlantis is out there in the Indian Ocean. But, I mean, nobody knows.
John,
I mean, maybe there were two of them. Yes,
sir. I can add on that, which is, I think what you're leaning to, which is the Earth has all these grid systems, and the grid has a lot to do with, like, the, you know, tectonic plates and everything, right? And, you know, these energy centers of the Earth, essentially. And I think the Mediterranean and, like, the Middle East in general, if you think about, you know, Middle East, that's kind of like the cradle of civilization and everything else, but kind of sprung from there and whatever else. I think there's something energetic to different parts of the planet, and it's almost like a chakra. If you think of it like a chakra system, it's not exactly like that, but it like that, you know what I mean? It's just basic energy grid kind of pattern that's going on through seismic plates, and I think that has a lot to do with, you know, potentially corresponding to ET sightings and just a phenomenon in general. I think there's something to these certain energy centers of the planet. And I know that because I experienced it in Ibiza, Spain. Like, literally this place has an energy to it. Like, it's the most magnetic place on the planet. You can look in yourself, Esvedra, Esvedra. It's like a majestic spot, like, of energy, like, that's jutting out of the ocean. And there's
Now, I've got to tell you that this is something I'm not familiar with. So I would prefer, and in fact, I would like for you to text me the name of that place, and we will get this together, and maybe we could talk about this on a subsequent Scarycast special. Would you like that?
Yeah, absolutely. It has energy properties that even affect compasses and things like that. If you fly over, like, it's well documented.
So I'll just say, please text me the name of that location, and we will put together some information and share it with everybody. How about next week on our Scarycast special? Would you be up for that?
Sure, but just let me just say right now that it's you know that Homer the Odyssey from the Greek ancient kind of script, like the book Homer the Odyssey.
Absolutely.
Where he went on. Yeah, so you know that island he went to that was the sirens, where, like, he literally had to tie himself to the flagpole, or else, like, you know, the sirens were going to, like, seduce him to death, essentially? That they, think that Ibiza was that place. It was like, you know, because it's in the Mediterranean, like, if you think of Greece, and they went on this adventure, right? Eventually they're going to go, like, in that side of the Mediterranean, and they think that this is, like, a magical place in that Homer the Odyssey. As well, Nostradamus, he predicted that being a very important place in the end times. I'll put it just like that. If you look at Nostradamus, Ibiza, he said specifically, was an important place in the end times, whatever that means. I can look more into that, but I definitely know that he had some...
Here's my question, is I think people are yearning too much for the end times. And I don't think that they are that near. That is just my take on it. I mean, everybody wants to hold the end times, but I know that we know that they're going to come. It's like I sell life insurance, and I know the one thing that I can guarantee you is that you are going to die, and you're going to need life insurance. That's the one thing I can guarantee you. The one thing I can guarantee you is that there are end times, but when they're going to happen, we do not know.
Well, think about it this way. Another way to put end times is a conclusion. Conclusions are good things. In conclusion in sales, you want to close a deal, right? Or you want to bring a conclusion to a situation. You don't want to leave, like in a symphony, you know, like a Mozart symphony, you know, it comes to that end, the crescendo or whatever. It comes to a conclusion. And that it's nothing that's necessarily end times. Like, don't think of it in a destructive way. Think of it in like a cycle way, cyclic, I can't say that word, but, like, you know, it's like...
It's cyclic, okay?
Yeah, exactly. So I think that if you look at it in that sense, you know, it's not an end times. It's like a new paradigm. Like, end of an old paradigm, which is just a way we perceive the world or ourselves, we're coming into a new paradigm and how we perceive the world and ourselves and the greater picture, or what in psychology we call the gestalt or gestalt of things. It's like, you know, the whole forest, right? Not just the tree, right?
Exactly. Well, I tell you what, Mark, we've got just a few minutes left. So what I would like to do, number one, I'd like to say thanks to WLSC AM and FM for carrying Scarycast. Number two, We're going to be back next week on Monday night, 9 p.m., and we've got another great guest. The name of the guest escapes me, but you can find it on the website, on the Facebook page, the ScaryCast Podcast. And, Mark, I'd like for you to give us your closing thought from tonight, because you know what? It's been a remarkable and amazing interview with you. And let me ask you this. Would you like to come back next Tuesday night to do a ScaryCast special with me?
Absolutely. I think this is a very unique experience. You know, I've been part of your show for quite a while now, and it's always great, and the collection of people you bring on. But having this one-on-one and for us to dive deeper and more focused is a great thing, I think, for a podcast. You know, like some of my favorite podcasts, like Joe Rogan, it's like a one-on-one interview, and I think, you know, a lot more can be uncovered and focused on in that sense. So, absolutely. Anytime, John. You know,
I'm going to schedule you next week. We'll do it at nine to ten, because at 9:30 to 10:30 is a little bit encroaching on my bedtime. But we'll do it nine to ten next Tuesday night, and that will be another ScaryCast special with Mark Johnston and Dr. John Stamey. So now, give us your final take. You've got a couple of minutes. Tell us what you want everyone to hear and remember from this podcast.
Well, I just want to say that I come from a very objective way of looking at things, a scientific background, where I want to see concrete evidence. I want to see things, you know, and proof in myself. And when I experience things that are, you know, I can't prove or I can't relate to, you know, it kind of upsets me, it frustrates me, and what I can do is try to connect the dots, and that's what I've done over the years on this experience that I've told you about. And I'm just trying to connect the dots with things. And I believe, you know, when you're looking at bigger pictures of things, and even if something like psychology, my background, it's like you can't concretely confine the human conscious. You can only look at the effects of it and try to, you know, draw a conclusion based on, you know, some behavior or whatever else, right? And language. And that's what I'm trying to do here, is just look at the bigger picture and draw conclusions based on what I do know and what I can see. And what I see in my basic conclusion is that there's, based on my own experiences, that there's something alongside us, like right here with us. They're here.
They are right here.
Yep.
You look to the right and you look to the left, and if you look to the right, they're on the left, and if you look to the left, they're on the right. Well, look, Mark, thank you very much. We have enjoyed talking to you. I'll do the quick call around with you after the show. I want to say thanks very much. My good friend Mark Johnston has been with us on a ScaryCast special. We will be back next Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, for another ScaryCast podcast. Thanks, Mark Johnston. We appreciate you. We love you very much, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you, John. Much love, John. Have a good night.